Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Brian Brushwood.
Yo, beautiful people!
Justin Robert Young.
Hi, friends. It's me, Justin Robert Young.
Gentlemen, last time we sat down at these microphones, there was some speculation about an announcement coming from NASA regarding Mars.
Yeah, the speculation was whether or not it was secretly a viral campaign to promote The Martian, right?
Yes. Well, there's that. We left it off with it's probably water, probably like slushy water coming out of, you know, somewhere. And the announcement was it's water, slushy water coming out of somewhere.
Yeah.
Which is awesome. It means that there's liquid water on Mars, quantities enough to be visible from our observation satellites orbiting the planet, and that it's going to be briny or salty and not at all very, very tasty water. And here on Earth, you know, something that's that salty doesn't really have much life in it, but it means that there's water coming from somewhere, and it could be vast reservoirs underneath the surface. It could be a glacier for all we know, but there's water on Mars.
Well, let's put liquid water. Let's put the rosiest of glasses on and correct me if I'm wrong here, but I think I remember reading at some point that there's not a single spot on the planet Earth where liquid water exists that we have not found life. Is that accurate? I mean, outside of, you know, in a sterile distillery in the middle of the Anheuser-Busch Corporation or something, but
you know,
but
one of the areas that's, I think it's, what is it, the Akami Desert, and I may be mispronouncing that as per as usual for me, the Akami Desert, with the, so there's like the high desert, like, where in South America, like Peru or someplace up there, Chile, like it's way up in the high altitudes that it's very, very dry. And I think that there they found like harder to find Atacama Desert. Thank you, literate people in the audience.
It's good that we have a spare brain.
Yeah, I know. Good Lord. It's and people don't correct me anywhere nearly as much as I need to be. So the Atacama Desert is, I know it's one of the areas that they go, you know, looking for like examples of coral air. So it goes through Chile, Peru, Bolivia, and Argentina. So it's very high altitude. And some of those places there, I don't know if they're totally devoid.
I mean, it's practically like a Mars-like surface up there, right? They pretty much practice being on Mars up on those high deserts.
And, you know, but the thing is that that's not to say that there couldn't be or wouldn't be or there might not be in some smaller format. And also, so much of when we look at the picture of our planet right now and we see these environments, we kind of think of a lot of them existing for thousands or tens of thousands or millions of years. But the ecosystem in the United States alone has changed radically in the last 5 or 6,000 years, radically changed. And, you know, there are deserts. If you go to Africa and you look in places like, let's say, Ethiopia, we think of it as being this very, very dry area. But during Roman times, it was lush and fertile, and it was, you know, the breadbasket of that part of the world. And so these things can change very quickly. But if you have a much more gradual change, there's more time for things to adapt and evolve, which might be the case of Mars.
That's interesting. So I guess the other thing that's interesting is most of the discussion has been whether or not this means or implies that there's a greater chance of finding life. But I wonder what this means for the practical point of settling on Mars. Like, let's say we land a probe and they're like, yep, absolutely no microbes, nothing living here. Like, if we wanted to build a colony, would it be better to land at a place where flowing briny water is available, or does it not matter? Would it be better, you know, landing on an ice cap and digging up some frozen H2O?
Well, remember, most of the ice caps are probably CO2.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that water's good. Water is very, very good. You know, we're going to need it for a lot of things. And so salty water, whatever, means we have to figure out an efficient way to desalinate it. But absolutely better that there is water than there's not.
What about you, Justin? What went through your mind here in this news? Are you like big whoop? How many times can you sell us the same headline, NASA?
No, I mean I don't think that it's I'm not like area man throws a long exaggerated masturbation motion to NASA news. It wasn't like that. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think it's really, really rad. This seems to be something that has more physical proof to it than some of NASA's other announcements, which they've had to walk back. So this seems like a big, reasonable estimate based on the evidence. It is exciting that is there. It is indicative of the fact that Mars itself continues to come more into focus for us as an increasingly space-faring, race of humanity. So I don't know. I mean, I think it's super rad. It's super interesting. I also think that I hope that this is among the last of the really interesting tidbits we get from just looking at Mars, and we continue to get that in the next 20 years, in the next 25 years, this kind of hey, we took some pictures and this looks interesting kind of news is in the margins of history compared to what we know about Mars as we look more and more toward putting people at, near, around there.
So what does that look like in terms of either if you want to speculate on a schedule or what kind of mission we send? Are you over robotic probes or?
No, more, all, everything. Yes. I want cheaper space entrance, right, by way of better rocket technology and more efficient rocket technology equals we can do more stuff. And I think this is the kind of stuff that this is indicative of what NASA is both best at and the frustrating position I think the public has with NASA. Because aside from I'm into space with a capital S and look at me, I'll post all these macro, people writing on top of other pictures with quotes on it onto my Facebook wall. That's how much I care about space. Beyond that crowd, there was a little bit of so there's water on Mars, there's not water on Mars, whatever. Because NASA's great at looking at it. They're great at understanding that, hey, this is where we are. This is what would be interesting. This is what would a breakthrough would consist of. But we just need more. All of it. More.
I got a speculation question for you guys. Which of these three things do you think will happen first? A base on the moon, a manned visit to Mars, or mining on asteroids on an ongoing basis?
So by base, you mean someone's living on the moon?
Yeah, I would say permanent base, but Mir should have been permanent. Skylab would have been permanent. So I'm going to remove the permanent, but the intention of we now have a moon base and that's where we go. It's as permanent as the ISS or Mir or Skylab.
I don't think that anybody is going to green light the funds to put a base on the moon. I think the sexier option would be to either have a private entity mine an asteroid or be able to galvanize by way of public and private funds a trip to Mars. So I would say a base on the moon for me is out, and more likely I think would be somebody attempting to mine an asteroid and mining it enough that they could say they were the first to do it.
I my only hesitation in agreeing is that if we're going to Mars, it's just exponentially so much more difficult to make the trip to Mars. And part of what we need to figure out from Mars, we can learn by establishing a moon colony or a moon base or whatever. So it just seems like that's a natural backyard to learn to pitch a tent before we go out into the great wilderness, you know? What about you, Andrew?
I think there certainly are some things that would relate, and I think that there are some things that would not. I think that we're not in the age where we only have two superpowers that are capable of doing this, and you were going to have many different goals and many different approaches towards what we're going to do. The incentive for going to Mars is, hey, long term, Mars could be a new Earth, and that's exciting. And Mars seems to be more complex, might have more interesting materials and resources and things like that to do. The moon, you know, we're still figuring things out. I expect that, you know, we've planned and talked about doing a return to the moon, and technically speaking, that we don't have to worry about, you know, that it's the getting to there is such a big problem. You know, the getting to there is the hard part when it comes to Mars. Getting to the moon is a lot easier because you only need a spaceship where people last 3 days and there's much less radiation and there's all of that. But, you know, for Elon Musk, you know, who seems to be the most motivated person right now, you know, his goal is Mars. You know, that's his goal. But, you know, will people be using Falcon 9 rockets or, you know, Falcon Heavies rather to send spaceships and landers and stuff to the moon? Why not? You know, there's now been growing talk about building private space stations. You know, the realization that you could do a lot of really cool stuff if you had, you know, easier access and commercially available space to do that. So I don't know. I don't hear as much of a clamor and a cry for, hey, you know, let's go to the moon. And, you know, your argument that technically we can solve problems there would be helpful is very valid. There's the argument others have made, not you, that like, oh, well, it's a, you know, from there, then we can just hop to Mars. It's like, well, no. It's like getting to Mars is you have to get really, really fast and all that, and being 220,000 miles up in the lunar gravity well and putting everything up there, then it doesn't help.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. Well, and it's like, you know, the challenge is, you know, that's the is it the Heinlein quote that, you know, once you're out of Earth's gravity, you're halfway to everywhere. And it makes no sense to go enter another lesser gravity well and act like, yeah, you know, that's helping you on your trip.
The thing that I think will happen, though, is that, you know, Google has a prize. They offered a prize before, the Lunar X Prize, which was unclaimed, which was to try to put a lander on the moon. And we just discovered water on the moon. You know, that was a big revelation. And if, you know, we can start exploring that further and find other resources, let's not talk about, like, you know, helium-3 or anything like that, but other more useful materials and stuff, there might be some sort of advantage.
By the way, was helium-3, was that a boondoggle? Because I thought that was an almost profitable mineral to get from the moon. And keep in mind, I based my science on Duncan Jones's movie, The Moon.
No, I mean, it's there, you know, but it's one of these far off kind of things that it's you're not going to build a successful business model on a material that there's not enough market for the ability to be able to use it right now, you know, when you have all these other
near-term. There would have to be other elements of like getting back and forth to the moon in a cheap enough way and an economy based on what that would sell for and that. That price driving up before anything like that makes any kind of sense.
Yeah, if you had other things there, like if you had materials, raw materials that you could do manufacture, if you can make spacecraft on the moon, you know, then great, because then you can save a lot of fuel issues as far as escaping lunar gravity.
Did you guys ever read The Moon is a Harsh Mistress by Heinlein?
Yes.
Justin, did you? There's
I think I listened to like the first third of it, and it didn't capture me. I think it was the audiobook reading too. The audiobook reading kind of.
Oh yeah. When the guy read the robot voice, he would really oversell that it's a robot, man.
Yeah, I forget what it was, or maybe it was like an accent or something that he was doing for the main character that was just like, all right, man, are we just gonna play around this whole book?
There was, as far as like the efficiently getting materials back and forth, he set up this asymmetry where it's like people are on the moon to mine moon stuff and send it to Earth, and because you're not sending people back or anything, all they did is they essentially had just like a giant ballistics cannon. They would package stuff up and they would just fire it like a gun and it would fall to Earth and they were like, yay, we caught it. And spoiler alert, if you're going to read this, you know, 50-year-old short story, then...
Or see the movie directed by Bryan Singer.
Oh, shoot. When is that?
Well, it's the announcement that was his project, and they just announced it in May. We'll see if it happens, but that's...
Okay, well, spoilers incoming. Skip this if you don't want to hear it. As often happens in the middle act, they finally get their act together and decide they're going to declare independence from Earth, and they're like, but we have no way to fight. We have no resources. And then the whiz-bang computer figures out, you know, our greatest resource is that we have the higher ground in a very literal sense, and we have a cannon that, you know, can shoot giant chunks of everything. And so... They send out a threat to all of Earth saying like, hey, let us be independent, or here is all the coordinates where a detonation will occur, an impact of all of the things of that, you know, all these asteroid meteors will happen at exactly this time. And it was in a perfect grid all across the planet. And nobody believed them because it would be a feat of incalculable engineering. And sure enough, at this exact moment, you know, this grid of explosions happens all over Earth. And they're like, yeah, we're serious. You'll notice all these are non-populated areas. Leave us the F alone. So anyway, that seems like an interesting take on it.
There was also a very interesting theme in science fiction. There was a L. Ron Hubbard story. I can't remember the name of it, about the first trying to get to the moon first, and the Russians beat us there. And part of the reason the Russians then sort of declare that they've got this world domination because they have the moon, they can send rockets anywhere and everywhere. And so there's like this raid on this moon base, you know, which is, that was sort of the perception before we went there. It's like, man, if once you're up there, so easy to send things back down. And then we invented, you know, ballistic missiles and stuff like that and realized, oh, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Hey, have you gone public with your enjoyment of L. Ron Hubbard's audiobook programs? I mean, before I just outed you.
there are some very interesting pulp style science fiction stories on Audible, Full Cast Productions. They're pretty interesting.
I mean, he was a prolific writer, L. Ron Hubbard.
Yeah.
You know, a very successful, prolific science fiction writer.
Yeah.
Hey, you know who else?
And it's one of these things that we obviously tend to ignore him for obvious reasons and stuff. But, you know, I through somebody said, well, why don't you try to listen to some of those science fiction stories? And the Full Cast Productions are actually pretty good. I enjoy them. They're classic, like, pulpy sci-fi stuff, but
total embrace.
You can see in there the roots of some guy thinking a lot about making a religion and taking over the world. There's very much a lot of themes about that, you know, money making schemes, things like that. You're like, I think it's very good research to understand the origins of that.
That's amazing. Hey, should we take a moment to thank our 453 patrons that make our show possible?
Hell yeah. Head on over to patreon.com/weirdthings where you can go ahead and support this very show. The money that goes to there not only pays for Bryce Neshcom Castillo, who is here every single week making sure that we get our stuff on, that we're here on schedule and we make sure that we do a show. Listen, there was a time, a dark ages, not too long ago, kids, where this podcast didn't happen every week, where you know, sometimes it was just we would go months without a Weird Things.
Yeah, we really would, and it would be like maybe one a month, and it was one of those mushy things on our schedule that everyone could push, so everyone did, and then the other two would immediately use it as an excuse to be like, well, I mean, Justin's not here, what's the point? You know, Andrew's not here, what's the point? But now we have a commitment, we got a dog in the fight, and it's thanks Absolutely. Thanks to those patrons.
It's because
not
you.
That we advocate dog fighting, mind you.
No, but I am buying my Mike Vick Pittsburgh Steelers jersey because otherwise that team is screwed.
Did you see The Martian, Andrew?
No, I did not.
Oh, does that mean we can't talk about it? Should we wait?
We can talk about it.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Are you not going to see it?
I am excited about the success of it. I'm excited about the reviews for it and all that. I think that's great.
So not a priority to see it.
I mean, like, you ever root for something, but maybe it's not your thing?
Yeah.
Sure.
All the you time. Know, and that's my case with that. I tried to read the book, but it's just, there's a tone to it that's this very too cool for school kind of thing for me that just grated on me. But I absolutely think that that's great that Weir wrote the book. The guy put so much thought. I've loved the interviews with him, and I loved his reaction when they talked about water on Mars and stuff. And like, if I know, and I do this, but hey, blah, blah, blah. And there's already like science bashing of it. And I like, it's funny because it's like how gravity got bashed and often incorrectly by people who, you know, are like, oh yeah, well, this was wrong. And I'm not just talking about famous astronomer, you know, show guys. I'm talking about other people who just want to show that I know this thing. You don't science like I science, you know?
Well, we talked about this when it was Gravity. It's like, I don't understand this compulsion where the harder Hollywood tries to get it right, the more people come down crapping all over it. Like, if they don't even try, if you get a Star Wars or whatever, then it's like, oh, it's the best thing ever. But it's like, or if you Doctor actually Who try.
Or, yeah, and so I think that, you know, this is one of the most beloved science fiction, hard science fiction books to come out in, like, forever. The reviews for this have been fantastic. It's broken the Mars curse, you know, and it says that, and it's done so also it's a movie that says, hey, let's tell a story that's not about aliens, but about the human experience and all that. That's wonderful. That's awesome.
It almost took the all-time box office debut of October, currently held by Gravity. Gravity made $55.7 million. It's estimated that The Martian made $55 million. So practically within a rounding error, it blew past. Which, again, I mean, that's good if you want more movies like this, you know,
October is a very interesting spot for movies. It traditionally was not a place where a lot of very profitable movies came out, you know, including inflation. It should stand to reason that some of these very well received, very highly distributed in IMAX and 3D formats, movies like Gravity and The Martian should do well. It's all right. So, I mean, Brian, what angle do you want to take on this? It's like,
let's talk about everything except for the plot for as long as we can, and then give spoiler alerts going into it. I mean, I think it's fair to say, it's astonishing. Again, I guess tonally. Screw it. Let's say it's spoiler time, right? For the next 15 minutes or so, 20 minutes.
A guy's stuck on Mars. Guess how it ends?
Yeah,
you know, whatever. And that's pretty much all that I want to do in terms of the kind of spoiler elements of it. But Brian, what's your point?
Two things. I mean, obviously, I kind of want to break it down and compare it to Gravity because, and I don't know how much of this was the fact that I read the book a few times, and just tonally, it's so very, very different. Gravity really made me afraid of the harsh environment of space. And even though, you know, ostensibly Mark Watney is in a worse condition or as bad a condition in Mars, there's a lightness to it that made the show a lot more fun. I'd hate to say it. And again, this comes from a place of all love. I think I liked Gravity slightly more. I think Gravity was a slightly better movie. Although I had a great time. I'll probably go see it, Martian again. I don't know. I thought it was a fantastic adaptation of the book. I thought the parts that they took out from the book, I think, made sense because they needed to condense things for, you know, to an hour movie. I was really pleasantly surprised by the thing they added that was not in the book, where it's like there's this moment where it's like, hey, remember in the book when they suggest doing this thing and then they just don't do it? What if we did it? And I enjoyed that very, very much.
What? I mean, the ending was the big thing that I know.
Right at the end. I love that. They deviate greatly from the book, and they ended up giving me a surprise, which I really didn't expect.
Oh! In the final sequence, yes. The final set piece.
Correct.
I agree, Brian. Normally, so many times on these big movies, we kind of disagree. I think we have the exact same opinion. I think Gravity is a better movie, and not. It's so weird that we compare them because to me, it's comparing Halloween, the original Halloween,
and Halloween 3,
and Castaway. Of like, I don't know, man. I love Halloween more because it's this thrill a minute where death is chasing our heroine at every moment. But I don't know. Comparing it to Castaway, which is like a slow burn of understanding one man's desire to survive, I kind of feel like they're like.
What's funny is the reason we're comparing them is like it might as well be because they're both set in Ann Arbor, Michigan. You know, it's like they're totally different movies that happen to have similar set pieces.
I think this is a movie that suffers from its devotion to the book. And I think that in its execution, you find the best adaptations are the ones that change a lot in books and suit it more to what, you know, the medium is. And I know that it would have been a lot of wailing and gnashing of teeth, you know, for the Martian, but you've got a character that has no backstory, that literally shows up in the middle of the second act and gives you the solution that starts your third act, and then they have to shoehorn in a moment at the end of the movie where he just gives a thumbs up to another person who's been there the entire time.
Okay, yeah, we it's fair to point that out. Like, Donald Glover, I'm pretty sure he shot all of his scenes in half a day. I think he came in, you know, like, okay, you just woke up, you're discombobulated, gripe about, and then you got an idea. All right, we'll see you on Thursday, and now just say, just make sound effects, walk around the director
Which,
of NASA.
By the way, like, the fact that you know, this is a character who is supposed to be this this gigantic brain, right? And like, you know, just the plight of the nerd in Hollywood, right? That it's like, yeah, no, for the twitchy guy who has the idea that changes everything, he's Troy and not Abed, right? He's Donald Glover, literally like the coolest guy on the planet. The guy who's not only a successful rapper, but also an actor, but also a comedian, but also this ball of charisma, like not, you know, a quiet, twitchy human who's like, oh no, wait, this is the guy who actually like populates these jobs. Side note, it's a good movie. I really, really liked it. I think it is at its best when the themes of humanity and how saving one person brings out the best in the world are highlighted. It gets there eventually, but the first half of the movie I really felt was a bunch of glimpses at versions of the movie that I think would have been interesting that never really gel. You know, it's not this anachronistic disco themed visual treat. You know, that maybe a more avant-garde director would have taken.
It's show title.
What was that?
There's our show title.
Yeah. It's
an anachronistic disco tree.
Exactly. Yeah, it's not Castaway, where you're just putting a camera on Matt Damon and saying, hey, go win yourself an Oscar, kid, by freaking out and just like owning the movie for the first half. Now, there's bits of all of that, and it's not this kind of like laugh a minute, he's cracking wise because maybe he's going crazy, maybe he's handling this perfectly, we don't quite know kind of things. There's bits, there's little sprinkles of all those things in there, but it never settles on one. And by the point where the movie catches its stride is when it's about Earth. It's not about Mark Watney. And I wasn't expecting that. And I think the movie suffers because it's not about Mark Watney inspiring the Earth. It turns out to be how the Earth is inspired by Mark Watney. And you don't get to that until halfway through the movie.
Yeah, there are, having said all that, because I agree with all of that. I think it got closer to gelling for me than for you. But then again, everything's enhanced, and I saw it with Penny Vision. If you can go see any of these movies with your 11-year-old who's really into science, then that's going to enhance
your experience. You should just rent her out, you know, just so you can you know, have an 11-year-old who loves science, and she just goes to see the movie every Saturday, you know.
She's going, hi, I'm Penny, I'm your science girl.
Can I be clear on something, people?
Sure.
Can I be clear on something? Yeah. I will see this movie at some point. Don't get me wrong.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
It may be I'll buy it on iTunes and whatever like that. I have to get part of it, too, is kind of like the taste of the trailer out of my mouth. You know, when it starts off and it's, you know, smarmy. I love Matt Damon, kind of smarmy Matt Damon and all along the Watchtower plane and like, look how cool this is. I'm like, oh, really? All right. This is. You're not marketing this to me, you know. This is just
well, and that's the thing is you have to bury the fact that there's a lot of orbital dynamics and math in this movie. You bury that stuff as deep as you can if you want to get people in.
I don't even mean it like that. I just mean that it's nerds in leather jackets. You know,
yes.
It's that let's show people how cool we're gonna wear leather jackets. That's cool. It's that kind of presentation of it that just sort of gets to me, you know.
Now, having said all of that stuff, which I don't dispute any of it, there were a few moments that I really think the movie's saying. I think that you know, his realization of trying to grow crops on Mars, there's a few moments. Sometimes he does well. Tell you know when he realizes that the human feces can be good, you know, has all that fertilizer sitting around, and Some of the segments where he's blogging from Mars, I think, I don't know, they just process, like, now these are the things, audience at home, you need to remember blank, blank, and blank, because it'll be important later. But
there's sometimes where they run them way too close. Where it's like, couldn't you, if you're literally just stream of consciousness, couldn't you mention that, like, three scenes ago, instead of it being like, and now I got to figure out how to get blank. Well, I figured out how to get blank is like the next scene. Like it just, it's, well, it's
but there are other moments where it's like, I don't know, I really believe it, you know? And it's like, you know, when it gets too cold for him, and certainly that moment that, you know, it's what was it, 6 months later, and all of a sudden he's, you know, rail thin and looking like Justin Robert Young. I mean, it's, it's
sores on his face. You know?
He's got this
Conahay's unzipping him from a bag. And,
but and certainly,
just a dream, you know.
Certainly, yeah, you know. And again, you and me, Justin, suffer from the curse of knowing, because we, you know, we read the book. The stuff like the relationship between I don't know, was it Beck and Johansson? I forget who, but you know, it was sort of implied, and you got the implied quid pro quo with the Chinese over getting a Chinese astronaut on the Ares 5 and stuff.
I was fine with the issue I had with the condensation. And I don't like the book the way you like the book.
Yeah. And that's fine.
I liked the book fine. I thought the book was good. I thought the book was ultimately too focused on it. Like, by the time I was finished reading the book, I'm like, is this the best written math workbook ever? Like, is there, like, am I immediately going to be getting quizzed because, like, they just really explained very, very well how a lot of complex math problems are done? It's not that anything is necessarily done poorly. Everything's done really, really well, and it's really fun, and it's well acted. It just, I don't know. I just had a hard time connecting. And you want to know what? Now that we're talking about it, I can't roll it over in my mind without it showing up. I don't think that Matt Damon's the Mark Watney that I think would have made that movie as good as it could be, because he's not vulnerable enough. If that makes sense,
he has a little too much Jason Byrne in him. I see that. He's got too much strength, and there's a vulnerability.
Jason Byrne, a super cool dude. Yeah.
That's what I got out of the trailer. I watched this thing, and I'm like, Jason Bourne's going to survive Mars. There's no doubt in my mind. It's just, he's a cool guy. All right, I'm going to solve this problem. I'm going to science the blank out of this. Okay, you're going to win. Got it.
Two other moments that I think are significant in the movie. I loved the change, you know, in the book, and again, who cares, it was in the book, but the captain of the mission did not run in and be like, no, I'm gonna get him, and run off and go do it, because she's riddled with guilt. That did not happen in the book, because that would be an irresponsible way to run a mission, but I love that they did it in the movie, because we kind of know that Mark Watney's gonna survive. And if it's just random crew person who goes out and saves them, you know, you don't know. You're like, yeah, of course, everyone's going to survive. But by making it this guilt riddled commander who goes out, you think, well, he'll probably survive. But, you know, maybe she gives a noble sacrifice here. And it added a lot of tension that I think otherwise wouldn't have been present in the movie. And also, I'm going to give a big thumbs up for Sean Bean being in the Council of Elrond, the Lord of the Rings reference moment when they get together.
Yeah. I almost, like, all right. Ridley Scott. Can we have a Ridley Scott conversation?
Yeah, by the way, Ridley Scott, who's blabbing his mouth off about a new Blade Runner franchise and a script that Harrison Ford allegedly loves.
How close to Ridley Scott at his peak powers are we really right now?
Define his peak powers. Was it when he got an Oscar for Gladiator?
I mean,
did you? I just watched Exodus the other night.
Was Exodus?
So my opinion on Ridley Scott, whom I love in I think is one of the greatest directors ever.
He's a god.
He is a god. He is a god that often takes scripts that are not as developed as they should be and makes very beautiful, well-cast movies that sometimes just don't feel like they function right, like Prometheus, you know, or, you know, he'll often, you go watch a Ridley Scott movie, you're like, man, like, you know, when the script is perfect, he delivers so much more. And when it's not, like Exodus, did you see it?
No, I did not.
It's beautiful. Beautiful movie. Beautiful movie. I think the cast is really good. And, you know, there's the argument like, oh, why are these people playing Egyptians and all this? Like, well, we don't know what they look like. And guess what? Moses probably isn't a real story. You know, you look like anybody. It doesn't matter. It didn't happen. But it's sort of a convoluted kind of thing in this. But it's an absolutely beautiful movie, you know, just as far as the way it's shot and everything else, you know. But, you know, and it's funny, it's like, you know, we get the comment in the comment thread, like, oh, a lot of beautiful white people in Egypt. I'm like, well, what did the, you know, Hebrews look like back then? I don't know. You don't know either.
Yeah. They didn't have Instagram.
Yeah. Fair enough. All right. So
here's my point about Ridley Scott. There are moments in that movie that if you look at where we are with action pacing, and especially if you're going to compare it to Gravity, for whatever you want to say about it, is edge of your seat, you know, like action. You know, like you are always, you know, inherently in that moment what the rules of that universe are, and you know what the threats are, and you feel that Sandra Bullock is seconds away from dying constantly. There was a lot of The Martian that at the points where they keep reminding you visually or through plot points how tenuous Matt Damon's survival is, they feel almost out of left field because he is kind of constantly surviving very seemingly in terms of the visual language of the film very easily. And there are like a few moments that are great, like the wind howling against the plastic and stuff like that. That are good, but they're so few and far between. And even the action set piece at the beginning kind of just feels like something you would see on TV. Like it didn't feel big cinematic, like, oh my God. I mean, I read the book, so I know who survives and who doesn't, but like, you made a really good point, Brian. Maybe the captain will die. Maybe this other thing, like maybe all these people are going to live and die. And you didn't get a sense. It just kind of felt not quite there, not quite present, and that stopped me from getting involved in the movie in the way that I expected.
Right. Now, having said all that, I think it's still a recommend, right? I think we still say definitely, you know.
Oh, we're seeing. Absolutely, yeah. We're seeing. You know, I think it's one of those, you always critique the person who has great promise, you know? It's like no one's, when we like love movies that are big, deeply flawed, but super fun movies, like you just understand that they got their flaws and whatever, but go see it because it's really rad. The Martian, well, and really, I mean, this gets back to a theme we've hit a million different times on this show in a million different ways, that it's like, let's all be science fans because we like things and not necessarily like a website that has a three digit and a letter URL that called The Martian the greatest thriller of the year. That's a lie, and you should have your website revoked
from the international website.
From the international website board. Like, stop it! You're lying to people. It's not the greatest thriller of the year. It's a good movie. It's a fine movie, but it doesn't have to be the craziest thing on the planet. It doesn't have to be the best thing ever. We can just like it. We can just like it, and we can like the book, and we can critique the movie, and that can be fine. We can all live together fine, not having everything be the best thing ever, where we're just like coding ourselves and like, no, but I love it the most. I love it so. I love The Martian science so much that the only thing I'd like more of it would be if Neil deGrasse Tyson told me to not like it. That would be the only thing that would get me higher.
By the way, has anyone checked on the NGT NDG tweets?
Well, they preemptively reached out to him, you know, to get his
insight as, I guess, a Mars expert and explorer or something, you know, to, you know, get his hand.
They're like, they're like, get it over with. Come on.
No, I mean, I think that, you know, they went to him because, I mean, it's like that's, you know, that's the problem. It's like when you go do any kind of thing that's science related and you have somebody who's got a very, very big platform. And even though that may not be within their area of expertise, you're still worried, well, if this guy says this as he did with gravity, and I listen, I just saw the Dark Matter show at the Planetarium in New York. Amazing, fantastic, awesome show, you know. But, you know, he was wrong on a lot of his points about gravity, but that didn't stop a lot of people from repeating them and then deciding, making up an opinion about gravity that was not exactly what we'd call well-informed for people who claim to be rational. And thankfully, lots of people saw gravity, and that's why we got The Martian. You know, if gravity had tanked at the box office, you know, the idea of doing another disaster space movie, you know, of that scale would have been shot down.
So one quick note before we wrap up and get to a genuine mystery that, that Andrew Main sent to my Gmail box, also on the subject of Mars.
Those are the teaser.
The important pressing issue on Mars. We're finally going to get to it. But when Gravity came out, Max Landis tweeted out kind of like exasperatedly, like, what? So I guess there's that's a thing we do in movies now, is there's just no B plot. It's nothing but A plot, is literally nothing than Sandra Bullock tries to get home, and now she's trying to get home, and now she's trying to get home. I thought that was interesting because that's an observation. I don't normally tune into that kind of thing on movies. Is The Martian similar in that regard? Is The Martian about anything but getting him back?
Oh, no. I mean, you have the B plot's the Hermes.
Yeah.
All that decision, and
well, I guess you're right, because the A story is Mark surviving and the B story is Earth getting him home, and that makes sense.
And to, you know, Landis's criticism, he says a lot of things, and why, you know, a B plot's a great way to fill time. A B plot, if you don't have a strong enough A plot, a strong enough journey of somebody, then yeah. All of your great biopics, guess what? They're kind of just A plot. There's not a B plot there. You know, a lot of great movies are just A plot. A lot of great books are that. You don't, when you do a B plot, it's a way to cut away to do something else. And it's often a, it can be filler. There's, it's filler because you don't have enough of a narrative in the first place, which isn't bad, but that's fine. That's one of the things that made Gravity was shorter because it was focused on her journey and her trip, you know, and by the time you get to the end, great.
Actually, you want to know what? Because I was shocked by this. The Martian and Gravity have almost exactly the same running time. It's like difference of like 5 minutes. And Gravity felt so much shorter to me.
Wow. Wow. I did not know that. How long, what is that running time?
Let me look it up. But this was a conversation I had with Ashley. Gravity is an hour and 31 minutes.
Yeah, wow. The Martian felt huge compared to that.
Oh, never mind. Psych. I'm an idiot. No, it's almost an hour longer.
Oh, wow. 2 hours, 22 minutes. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm an idiot. No, yeah, I misread stuff. Okay. Psych.
Yeah, but at least Ashley will go on the rest of her life thinking they're about the same, telling that little nugget next time she's at a party.
It's like an hour longer.
So, Andrew, do you want to set up this this mystery for the ages, the real Martian story we should be talking about?
Those are the two teaser ones to the real one. Did I send you? I don't think I sent you the real one. So, you know, one reason we want to go to Mars is there's a lot of cool stuff to look at there. And I just sent Brian, two things, to look at, and I'm going to send him another one. Why don't you start off with the two things I sent you, Bryce?
All right. Well, that's all Bryce's department here. The first thing that we have here, here, let's take a look at this picture for everybody at home. We see what looks like a Martian landscape. It's a little difficult to see how close you are. You're either at, 3 miles up, or it looks like maybe a rover shot it. But Justin, can you describe what looks to be highlighted there in the middle of the large Martian landscape?
It looks like a large slope, and coming out of the top of the slope is something that can only be described as a gigantic wooden spoon.
Okay.
Floating.
I was about to say, because underneath its shadow appears to be, again, if you think it's a small object, it looks like a few inches below. If you think you're seeing it from way on up, it looks like it's floating a mile above the surface. But it's the USS wooden spoon floating over the surface of Mars. What's the story on this, Andrew?
Apparently Mars has floating spoons.
But I mean, is this from a rover or from an orbiter?
Mars is basically
this is from Curiosity.
Okay, wow. So it's tiny scale. Somebody found
it's a small scale, yeah.
Mars is effectively a screensaver from 1995. Like, it's just covered in floating spoons and toasters.
Instead of toasters. I would love somebody to tie this into a grand Martian conspiracy theory when it's like, well, of course, they got to cook their Martian food somehow. And of course, it's going to float because everyone knows that Martians are using floating cutlery because it's more convenient. You think they set them down like savages? No, their spoons float.
Well, Brian, there's going to be no shortage of interesting things to look at the more we photograph this rocky surface and find all sorts of unusual formations. Why don't you go take a look at another one we have there, Bryce?
Sure. Meanwhile, Tondagasa in the chat points out that you do need a floating spoon if you're going to stir the briny stew that is the flowing water on Mars.
Oh, my God. What's that hiding in the corner there?
I don't know. I can't really see it. I don't know.
It kind of looks like the famed face on Mars.
It looks like there's a cliff edge. And it looks like, I don't know, like an alien eye or something like
a face hugger.
Yeah. Or maybe, I mean,
Electroid from Buckaroo Banzai.
I'd hate to be vulgar, but it looks like a sphincter.
Sarlacc?
Blowing out. Yes, there we go. Sarlacc. I mean, that's kind of what I meant. I was trying to think of something.
No, all of that is perfect. I just want to play that one exchange a million times.
So there is something that some people are calling a spider on Mars, a Martian spider. But Martian spiders are actually something totally different. If you type in Martian spider into Google, you might get either photographs of this thing, or you used to get these weird ice-like formations or these things that pop up that look like they're eating the bodies of sandworms that have died.
And so this one also came from the rover?
It came from... something, probably.
Holy cow, I just saw what you sent. That's amazing. Justin, have you seen this?
Wait, huh?
Okay,
no.
All right. I don't know if you've seen all these. I think Bryce is opening it right now. I'll give you a hint. The title of this is called Marshenge.
What in the butt is happening here?
Let's see. The video posted on YouTube takes a closer look at the image from the Lunar and Planetary Laboratory at the University of Arizona. And could the builders of Stonehenge have visited Mars? And did they build the same thing there? Or is it just another face on Mars illusion? I don't know, man. I say
so. All right. Well, here let's be the council of guys who take conspiracy theories really, really seriously. Right.
Right.
What are the absolute you need to meet this scientific criteria rules for whether or not there's a Martian Stonehenge? It would have to be what, the same amount of stones, same formation of stones, maybe.
No, just has to be a few rocks in a circle. If as long as from space it looks like a areola without a nipple, then it's magic.
Brian, that sounds like you want to go to guys who just think conspiracy theories are rad, the meeting that's happening down the hall.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Here, and the guys who take conspiracy theories really seriously want to set scientific criteria for which we could match it to. So okay. Obviously, this is just a picture that's overhead. It's very, very low resolution. We can't tell exactly what it's showing or what the tremendous sandstorms of Mars have done to this structure. Let's say theoretically we could land right in the middle of that, and we were then checking out exactly what these structures were. What would be the elements that would make us say, absolutely, this is something that is from the creators of Stonehenge.
I would say rocks of a similar size and aspect ratios, so, dimensions.
So while the creators of Stonehenge were living in caves and burying their dead, you know, using ancient funerary practices and perhaps, you know, practicing human sacrifice, they also had a massive space program. Let me get this right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, first of all, what do you think they built Stonehenge for? It was so that they could do virgin sacrifices to summon blood magic in order to open up portals to other worlds. It just so happens that it's Mars. They hop on over. This is back when Mars had more atmosphere. They're like, hey, we got to build another portal so we can go farther.
Just when I think things can't get any more ridiculous, you bring us back to reality. I like that.
Unfortunately, it's not nearly enough rocks, and I don't think there's really a context for how big they are. I bet these are little mountains, basically.
It just doesn't rock hard enough. We want it to.
Yeah, you know what? Gentlemen, I move that we strike this one from the Mars list of awesome artifacts. I'm afraid it doesn't make the cut.
Yeah, no, you want to know what? I'm looking at an aerial shot of Stonehenge.
And it looks way more rad?
No, it didn't look anything like that.
No, nothing like it. And it's not like they're perfectly organized rocks there.
That's the problem, is like rock, there's that one like, jerk rock that's like standing way too close to a dude and his girlfriend. And it's like, look, you're messing it all up. We're all in the mosh pit together. Now you're just crowding space. Would you freaking get? And he's like, yeah, but I'm trying to get closer to the stage. And it's like,
so on that same link from Huffington Post Science, there is a slideshow of really cool photographs of stuff on Mars.
All right, let's play a rapid fire game here where we just look at the pictures and we name this object. This one I'm going to call Ossified Monitor Lizard, the podcast in rock form.
I'm going to say Tommy Iguana.
It's actually called Iguana.
Yeah, it's got that iguana waddle, right? And it's got this kind of like disapproving. He looks worried, like he's kind of scared about something. He's pensive.
He's Tommy Iguana.
The rock hard pensive iguana.
Next one.
Man, that looks like a starving. That's Mark Watney, the starved rat.
I think that looks like one of those plastic fake vomits.
really?
Like a bunch of bubbly stuff.
I don't know if you're intentionally burying the lead, Bryce, but you skipped a photo that I think is. The next one is the.
Was actually called Mars Rat.
No. The second one is this.
I don't control this slideshow. This is Huffington Post. There are no rules on Huffington Post.
Yeah, it's cool. Dude, Sasquatch the Rock.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah, dude. He's got kind of the gait, too. Like, he's doing kind of like the arms out.
Yeah, dude. Well, and that explains why Sasquatch is so hard to find here on Earth.
He's in the middle of the Macarena.
He's summers on Mars, man. Rock squatch, Tondagasa says.
Red rocks.
There's one called, I saw the title of this, so I won't say. What does that look like to you,
that
Justin?
That one is half the wishbone. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Dude, you're nailing it. This one's called the thigh bone.
It's connected to the leg bone.
I'm gonna say this one's called Space Jockey. The reason that Prometheus sucked is because he went to Mars.
It's Imperator Joe.
Oh my God, it does. Furious Joe.
This is a skull. This is from 2006.
The mysteriously appearing jelly donut, right? Is the one where it's like they saw nothing and then the rock showed up.
Yeah. According to NASA, the rover flicked it in its own path.
What a jerk.
We got a conquistador looking helmet. from
definitely. Yeah, it's an army helmet.
It's a well. I mean, I'd like to think that.
Well, didn't you know one of the fronts of World War One was actually Mars?
All's quiet on the Martian front.
It does look like a doughboy helmet. That's a good point. This one I can't make be anything.
It's my shoe that I left on Mars.
Oh my gosh, so. It does. Actually, I could see that. It's if Mark Watney did die and get buried alive on the surface of Mars and only one boot was left jutting straight up out of the Martian sand, this is exactly what it would look like.
Das Boot.
They say this is a door handle. This is from Curiosity in 2013. It's a fine-grained rock that has been polished by the wind. All right, and this is the last one in the slideshow.
This looks to me, because it looks like a massive, massive close-up, it looks like a quartz rock. I'm going to say shiny quartz on Mars.
I'm going to say Ashley's earring that she lost last week.
Oh, no. And what is this allegedly?
This is a, quote, flower found in 2012 by Curiosity. It's definitely not biological, but planetary scientist Eileen Yingst did tell Space.com that she would, quote, hesitate to say what it is.
Did you hear that? They're hiding the truth.
Yeah.
All of these come in ahead of Mars Henge in the I formally declare.
Yeah, no, all of these are way more awesome than Mars Henge. You know, Mars Henge was really, really hot 10 minutes ago. Now the luster has been lost.
Hey, do we want to make picks?
Yeah, let's make picks.
Let's pick.
I got a pick.
Yeah?
I watched this again last night. I dug it. It's now available on Video On Demand. Yeah, there was a lot of skepticism going into it when this came out, and there was a lot of dismissive sort of attitudes about it. I'm like, oh no, not this again. Haven't we done this? Blah, blah, blah. I, for one, always like to see dinosaurs eating people, no matter the context, and thoroughly enjoyed Jurassic World.
I still haven't seen it. I can't believe that that I haven't. I'm a bad person.
Mm-hmm. But had you seen it, right, Andrew?
Yeah, I'd seen it in the theaters, and I just watched it again on video.
Does it hold, or what's different watching it on the small screen versus in the theater? I mean, outside of it being smaller.
Technically, I watched it in a home theater with a very big screen. So
okay.
But that being said, what I like about it is, I think it's just a fun, the pacing's there. It's a movie that the lead up is enjoyable. Sometimes you watch some of these movies in the first hour of like, we're going to get into this. It's going to get into this. You're kind of like, all right, let's get our, like Godzilla, the first time I watched Godzilla in the theater, I enjoyed it because it's sort of this mystery kind of thing. And then you get to it and then it's over. And then you go to watch Godzilla again. And you're like, man, that first hour's a lot to sit through when you kind of just want to see Godzilla.
Yeah.
Where this, you know, there's cool stuff happening in the first hour. And it's a movie that doesn't take itself, it's respectful of the material and the world that Michael Crichton created, but it's not trying to outsmart it or dumb it down to the point. You know, they bring about, you know, very important kind of themes and interesting ideas. And because the idea, like, oh, they go like, well, Jurassic Park's 20 years ago. What happens now? And they make the comment like, well, kids look at a stegosaurus like an elephant. You know,
yeah.
Like, you know, so what? You know, and so I thought that it was a, you know, what happens when the park actually opens and people try to survive? You know, that's kind of cool to me. And again, it's, you know, essentially the same story in a way as the first one, but we don't have a bunch of scientists explaining things around. We have a bunch of people trying to deal with this reality.
Yeah.
I think Jurassic World is always smarter than it needs to be. And I feel like because it very rightfully kind of gets hit as like fourth movie of a franchise, reboot, like all these, you know, kind of negative elements that we have toward those, or immediate feelings that we have toward those movies. It's a story that gets a lot of very easy to get wrong stories really, really right. It gets a kid's story really, really right. You know, the reason why the kids are there is more interesting the more you learn about it. It gets a animal's relationship with a human story, which can very often be cloying and dumb, really, really right. The, you know, the relationship between Blue and Chris Pratt's character is something that evolves over the movie and ultimately has a tremendous payoff for the climactic moments of the stories and kind of goes on a journey. The further I get away from Jurassic World, the more I am in admiration of it and understand why it has been as successful as it has been.
Is it what, PG-13, right? Should I show my kids? Should I let the kids watch it?
I mean, there's some scary stuff in there. I mean, pterodons dragging people into the sky, people getting chomped on and eaten. If you show them the first one, then I think you're okay with this.
Well, okay. So as I mentioned before,
Josie, not Penny, is your answer.
Yeah, exactly. Josie came with me to see Godzilla and loved it. Penny would have freaked out. She would have gone nuts.
As Andrew said, a lot of scary stuff, death, carnage, Jimmy Buffett. It's you know, it's a lot to handle for a kid.
Yeah. That's so what's interesting about it right now, it is the number three top grossing domestic film of all time.
Wow.
It is $8 million away, which means maybe a few more weeks away from beating Titanic.
Wow. And so Avatar is still number one?
Yeah. Avatar is still number one at $760 million, which we won't see broken until January with the final box office take of Star Wars for the first couple months. But
Yeah,
you know, Jurassic World will beat Titanic if Universal has to go and sell DVDs out of the trunk of a car in the parking lot for Star Wars.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they're absolutely going, they're 8 million away, and like I think you're looking at the box office take, like looking at the weekly take as far as what it's doing. You know, it's last week it made 800 something thousand. This week it made 500,000. So I'm sure they're going to do another kind of push because I just think they want to take that crown from Titanic.
Yeah. I could see that. Hey, so my pick is The Martian. Go see The Martian. But I want to give a little tip of the hat. Something happened this morning that I never experienced. There are certain things that you enjoy one aspect of, and then you get to have a different flavor for it. And that's you know, you've heard me and Justin talk about Hearthstone a lot, but I'm always playing in the ranked games and all the single player experience. Today, I just wanted to try out a new deck, and I was like, "Hey, Justin, you want to help me figure out what's wrong with this this Mech Druid deck that I put together?" And he's like, "Yeah, sure." And I just played for fun with another human being, and it had been like I just hadn't done that at all, and it made me think, "Wow, what a great game that brings you together with other people."
That is really, really good, and it did bring me and Brian together. So much so that it'll be that much more painful when I totally take what he will be pissed wasn't his pick, which is the season finale of Rick and Morty!
Oh!
Rick and Morty, I really, really enjoy it. I think this has been an exceptional season. It is a show for writers almost to its detriment, like to the point where I don't know, you know, to throw away a gag that comes at the end of last week's episode. You have Morty, the young child, the grandson of the mad scientist who is your main character effectively, go and just act completely out of character. And, you know, at the end, Rick is explaining to him, like, "Oh, no, it was this thing that we made a big deal about you eating earlier in the
first act." He says in the first act.
Yeah, in the first act. "Don't worry. Your character's totally protected. You have never done that." And then, you know, throws the wrapper and you have like this pan in that like the ingredient he said was in there wasn't in there, which is like, I don't know who is even really appreciating that on a mass scale, but like it is something that I very much enjoy. And as you know, the new season of Doctor Who's out. I've liked the episodes that have happened thus far, but I really like science fiction that cares about writing. There's
By the way, are you still doing Who's the Boss?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Did an episode for the first the two-part season premiere. And we have not yet watched the one from last night, but we will, and we will do it, and it'll be up this week. But.
And for those not in the know, if you dig Doctor Who, you can listen to that's you and Ashley, right?
Yep, me and Ashley, we talk about you know the Doctor, and yeah, there we go. Who's the boss?
Available on your podcatcher device of choice.
It's you know, I really really like Doctor Who. And I criticize it because it is there's no better weekly successful franchise that has an opportunity to do big budget science fiction one episode stories. And it's like it's Doctor Who and what else? You yeah. know, like what else is even out there right now that can do it? So when it gets so flippy floppy and like who gives a rat's ass, like I get more frustrated with it because it's what we got, you know, it has the ability to do stuff.
Yeah,
I heard they're working on maybe like doing a Doctor Who spinoff, like set it in like a kids academy or something, or kids or something.
Yeah, targeted at adolescents, right?
Yeah, I think which they tried with K-9 or something like that, which was much younger and all that, but it's such a big kids brand now. It's so huge. Yeah.
No, it's gigantic, and I just, you know, I very much hope that it's written well.
Yeah. Gentlemen?
Yep.
It's been Martian.
Oh, damn!
What a twist.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.